Chapter 12, entitled Beyond Renunciation and Knowledge, text number 10. Ramena sarnam maturam pranite. Svavalkina mainurakta chitta. Vigada bhavena name. Tivradayonyam dadriso shukaya Ramena with Balaram Sardam with Maturam to the city of Mathura Pranite when brought Svafalkina Vayakura Mayi myself Anarakta constantly attached Chitta those whose consciousness was Vigada extremely deep Bhavena by love Na not. Me, then me. Vyoga, of separation. Tidra, intense. Adaya, who are experiencing mental distress. Anxiety. Anyam, other. Dadrisu, they saw. Sukaya, that could make them happy. Translation. The residents of Vrindavan, headed by the gopis, were always completely attached to me with deepest love. Therefore, when my uncle Akrura brought my brother Balaram and me to the city of Mathura, the residents of Vrindavan suffered extreme mental distress because of separation from me and could not find any other source of happiness. This verse describes the sentiments of the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, the gopis, and Lord Krishna reveals the incomparable love that they felt for him. As explained in the 10th canto, Lord's Krishna's uncle Akrura, sent by Kamsa, came to Vrindavan and took Krishna and Balaram back to Mathura for a wrestling event. The gopis loved Lord Krishna so much that in his absence their consciousness was completely absorbed in spiritual love. Thus, their Krishna consciousness is considered the highest perfectional stage of life. They were always expecting that Krishna would finish his business of killing demons and return to them. Therefore, their anxiety was an extremely moving, heart-rending display of love. Anyone desiring true happiness must take to the devotional service of the Lord in the spirit of the gopis, giving up everything for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Ovagyanatimanandasya ginandana salakaya chakshurumilitamya tasmai sigurave nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare In the nectar of devotion, it is said that as one is advancing in devotional service, gradually that devotional service becomes Sandranandavisheshatma. It says it becomes more and more dense. It means that not a moment is wasted. Avyakta kalatvam. Each moment is used in the service of Krishna. Whereas in the more beginning stages of devotional service, sometimes little service, then a little break, then again little service. There's a lot of space between the service that we're doing. And we are filling our time with many other activities. And as a result, we find it difficult to chant 16 rounds, quite a number. Whereas we see our great acharyas were chanting huge numbers of rounds, and day after day, because of their dense focus, their deep concentration on Krishna. This is really what Krishna consciousness means. And that is why the gopis felt separation. When there was one moment not focused on Krishna, immediately they were attacked by feelings of separation. Whereas in our case, we find it difficult to put our mind back to Krishna. Again and again, our mind drifts away and we get involved, we get busy with so many things that bring that focus back to Krishna. And we get absorbed in the ways of the world. And we are thinking about all the events that take place in our life. And this is quite, means a lot to us. What's happening, what's not happening. And this preoccupies our consciousness most of the time. And then in between, we try to do something for Krishna, and we struggle. So, therefore, how can we get step by step closer to that pure, unalloyed devotional service that the residents of Vrindavan displayed? That is our meditation this morning. This morning in this verse we are looking at the residents of Vrindavan and their total absorption in service to Krishna. And whenever somehow or other that was physically not possible, then they were meditating on Krishna. In this way, every moment they were using for Krishna. So we have to build up our remembrance of Krishna. Whenever we can, there should be some hearing about Krishna. Whenever we can, there should be some service. Whenever we can, there should be some chanting. Because somehow or other, these things stimulate the remembrance of Krishna. Smartavyam satatam visnu vismartavyo najatusit sarlavigini sedushu etiyo etikinkaram. All the rules and regulations of the scripture are meant for this one purpose, that we always remember Krishna and never forget him. Still, we find that if we turn our spiritual life into stress, then also it becomes hard to maintain. If we, with great stress, try to push ourselves to be more Krishna conscious, then we see that after some time there is a reaction, and that after some time we get this feeling of no initiative, so difficult. So as we are getting experienced in our spiritual life, we also find just passionate pushing is also not so successful. So yes, then what do we do? Therefore, Sankhya Purvaka Nama Gana Natibi, one has to build it up. It is the regulation that is important. But even in the regulation, one can push and push and push. And there is already so much stress in life. The modern world is very stressful. There's no doubt about it. Everyone's life contains, most people's life, let's say it like that. Maybe not everyone's life, but most people's lives are filled with stress. Work, study, A lot of stress, actually. My life also. And then, yes, sometimes I'm thinking, yes, if I take a lot of time for my Krishna consciousness, if I just am not so busy, then I can have a very nice bhajan, like relaxed and peaceful and nicely chant, rise early because I had lots of time. But when I don't have time, that's a little different. Then, when my japa is fixed in a short span of time, then the pressure is on, just to complete 16 rounds. It's like that. And I know, like the day will be so packed, and then what you don't chant in the morning, that you have to chant at night. It's basically that, because in the day there is no time. So this is a stress situation. So how to chant so nicely in a stress situation? This is oftentimes our life in Kali Yuga. And that causes a certain amount of struggle. One has to, of course, try to rearrange his life. One has to try and adjust his life so that there is space for Krishna consciousness. Sometimes there is just, we're too ambitious materially. Maybe we want too much on the material plane. Maybe it's not wise to move in the bigger house. Maybe it's not wise to buy the new car, because each of these things add to the stress. That is the price we pay. We must measure the price that we pay for our material facilities, not in money, but we must measure that price in stress. All these things, they cause a lot of stress in our life, and that stress takes away energy from what we can give to Krishna. Because by the time we are free, we have no energy. And then when there's no energy, it is difficult. Difficult to really give ourselves wholeheartedly. And then the tendency is there to start chanting on automatic pilot. And when we chant in that way, yes, we fulfill the quota, but we are not getting the same amount of juice. So this is something to watch. And yet we cannot completely help it, because we are caught. We are caught in life, in an age where everyone is upadruta, always disturbed. It is the age of Kali. This is the age where no one is just having a peaceful life. Everyone is in a rush. It already starts when you're young. To go to school, keep an eye on the watch. It is like that. We see in India, in village life is different. What time shall we meet? In the morning, sometime in the morning. It's not like at 10, 5 past 10. Where are they? It's already 5 past 10. In the village, no one cares like that. Morning time. So, something like 10. What time? Morning. 10, 11, 12. Something. Morning. This is noon. Noon. This is only 3 times. Morning, noon, evening. It's just like, sort of like that. It's like, we don't live like that. Right? We live in a whole different way. 11, it's like 11:30, it's like 12:15. All these moments that we have to perform a particular activity, and we live in a society where it's all so fixed. This is very different from the mood of Vrindavan. very different. So our modern society is not like Vrindavan, not at all, not at all. In Vrindavan I saw the bullock carts, and I saw the villagers, they go, they deliver the grains, right? They drive all night. That is to speak, the bullock is working all night. The man, he sleeps in the back, quite comfortable. And in the day, the bullock sleeps and the man is selling his grains in the market. It's shifts. And somehow or other, life is at a totally different pace. That pace is helpful. It makes Krishna consciousness easier. So there's no doubt that the Western lifestyle doesn't make it easy. It doesn't make it easy to chant. In India, not in the big cities, but in a village, after 8 o'clock, it's finished. Nothing going on, nothing. Right? It's just dark out there, no, but nothing, no one. Then it's easy to rise early in the morning. And at 5 o'clock, lots of people are already doing things, scraping their tongues or brushing their teeth in public, which is an Indian village thing. Everyone in the morning is there standing, brushing their teeth. This is what they do. Everyone. for hours. I've never seen people brush their teeth for so much time. We do it quick because we have to go to Mangalarjik, you know, so 1, 2, 3, okay, finish. But hours, really, scraping their tongue. They're really scraping. Anyhow, so the modern way of life doesn't just make it easy for us. So we have to be careful. We have to protect our spiritual life so that there is room. We have to create room in our life for spiritual activities. And I like the verse Yuktahara Viharasya, right, in Bhagavad Gita, which is explaining that also Yukta Vihar, right? It is not only speaking about working hard for Krishna, but it is also speaking about relaxation for Krishna. That's actually more important than we think. We need it. We need to actually, it's not Maya to relax. We used to think, when a devotee would go for a walk in the forest, they thought, now he's just enjoying his senses. This is not devotional service. Nowadays we begin to think, well, but this is maybe actually not bad, a little relaxation also. Because if spiritual life is just stress, then the mind will struggle. So we have to allow our mind to actually appreciate Krishna consciousness. We need to take some time for it. I used to chant my rounds faster before. I slowed down on chanting. It's more relaxed. I used really tense rounds. Now I'm just more try to be relaxed while I'm chanting. Try to chant attentively without stress. And I get more out of it, actually, than I used to. So I put so much emphasis now in my talk on this stress just to give us an idea that that to be deep in Krishna consciousness is not necessarily the same as, are you fired up? Are you fired up can also be the mode of passion. In the mode of passion there are lots of flames. So somewhere we must find a resting place at the lotus feet of Krishna. We must somewhere find, yes, this is really home. Vrindavan is our home. I used to, in the Dutch passport in the past, they used to write place of residence. So I had Vrindavan in there. And I kept it for years, you know, at least wherever I was. Passport reminded me. Vrindavan is our residence. In the commentary of Madhavacharya to the first chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he mentions that Mathura is not a place, but that Mathura is a state of consciousness. Mathura Mandal, yes, the Dham. Mathura in this case means the holy Dham of Vrindavan. He says it's a state of consciousness, and Mayapur is none different from Mathura. So it's a state of consciousness. And the devotee must somehow or other be in that Vrindavan consciousness, and we must cultivate this Vrindavan consciousness. Thus, Mathura Vas is one of the five principal limbs of bhakti, to be a resident of Mathura or Vrindavan. Even here in Melbourne, one must always look at Melbourne as this is not home. As soon as we start thinking that Melbourne is home, we are in Maya. Yeah, I'm especially looking now at the Chinchirupa because she's been here for forever. But I know that she knows what I'm talking about. That Vrindavan is home. Vrindavan is real home. Not Melbourne. Who in the world could call Melbourne home? What's here? Whatever is there is, whatever is of value here is that part that is Vrindavan. Radha Vallabha, this temple. Yes, this is Vrindavan. This is not Melbourne. But Melbourne, Swanston Street. Myers, you know. The name sounds close to Myers, isn't it? Myers. So, like this, you know, in Melbourne, what is there that is so good that we would come back for it and take another birth once again? Ready for that? Another birth in Melbourne? One more time? Yes? Come? We must think about that. I often think like that, that Ksine punya maitya lokam vishanti. There are living beings who go to the heavenly planets and then they come back down to this planet. And there are many who are carrying on with their devotional service from a previous life. Neha vikrama nasasti pratyavaya navityate svabham apiyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. There is no loss or diminution in this process. Thus, life after life, a devotee continues, life after life. But I don't want life after life. Wait a minute. I want to, if possible, go back to Godhead. This life, that was the plan. That was actually the original plan when I became involved in Krishna consciousness. And that was the original plan Srila Prabhupada had. That's how he preached. That, yes, back to Godhead now. This is it. This is it's finished. This is the last life. Not automatically, but by making that endeavor. And that spirit, that this is our last life, that it's supposed to be our last life, that is important for all. That we have to keep in mind. That should be our meditation in devotional service. I'm going to make this the last life. Well, then we must be very careful. Why? Why did we come back? If we were, suppose we were devotees. It could be that we were not at all devotees, that maybe we were a worm who got lost in the temple garden and then just one Vaishnava spit and it landed on our head. But it was great fortune. And then suddenly we came back in next life as as a bhakta in the temple. It could be that. Or it could be that we were devotees in our last life. Suppose we were, then how did it happen that we didn't make it, that we had to come back? What did we do wrong? What is it? And would there still be some tendencies left in us from the last life? Did we maybe in our last life criticize other devotees? And are we maybe doing it again? Maybe. Did we say in our last life, oh, it's so difficult to give up sense gratification? And are we maybe doing it again? Oh, it's so difficult to give up sense gratification. Like this. This is known as puna punas charivita charivinanam. Again and again, chewing the chewed. Right? The same thing, like chewing gum that's lost its flavor, and you put some sugar in there. And that's pretty low class. Chuck it out. Chuck it in the bin. Let's go forward. So this is the principle. If we want to, we must really think Vrindavan as much as possible. The mood of the resonance of Vrindavan we should try to bring into our life. But everything centers around Krishna. So we can at least externally bring more Krishna into our life. Internally, it may be difficult. It's difficult because how much can you force it? If we force too much stress. So we cannot force your Krishna conscious. I must be Krishna conscious. And only Krishna and nothing else but Krishna. And I just be Krishna and Krishna consciousness and totally no Maya. And I want to see my this it doesn't, it's not sustainable. Right? After a little while you snap out of that, you know. Sometimes we say that Krishna consciousness is not brainwashing. But some people, it seems, they try to treat it like that, as if it is. You know, I must push out every material thought. I must become completely focused on Krishna. I must. So, if we just... Well, recently I was writing something, and it was about a person who by the mercy of an exalted spiritual master had been elevated and had been brought to a sacred place. There, in that sacred place, all the residents were totally absorbed in Krishna. Krishna was completely the center there, and these residents, they were always serving Krishna. Our hero in the story, unfortunately, was not on that level. He was a mercy case. But somehow or other, he was there in that place. Really, he didn't have much to offer. He was really a beggar. But somehow or other, because such an elevated devotee as his spiritual master had left him there, the devotees, the pure devotees, tolerated him. He could not really follow them, but did sometimes get some remnants. Now this beggar lived in a little hut on the stream of his thoughts. Yes. So this stream of the thoughts is just going on and on and on. And of course, just like the Ganga in Mayapur, I don't know if you know it, but on the side, the water is sort of flowing slowly, and then if you go further out, it goes, the stream, the current becomes stronger and stronger. And if it catches you, that's it. There you go. Woo! There's nothing you can do about it. You can be a good swimmer, but the current will catch you. That's how you can float, but you go with the current. So, interesting how our stream of thoughts is like that. Therefore, when we go into, when our beggar entered into the stream or the current of his thoughts, he made sure to stay close to the shore of sadhana bhakti. That was the one thing that kept him from becoming swept up in the current of his thoughts. because you know they're just down there, there are falls, whirlpools, and if you get dragged a long way, there they say there are crocodiles and whatnot. So we are a bit concerned about the stream of our thoughts. So this is the condition of a sadhaka. A sadhaka, one who is performing devotional service in practice, must be careful, cannot just relax completely and let his thoughts just go along, because then you come at some big rapids and waterfalls and so on, and there will be a crash landing. So internally we have our limitations, but externally we can do a lot. And externally, the arrangements that we make can have a great effect on our consciousness. Pictures of Vrindavan, nice pictures around us, yes, it helps a lot, it reminds us. And not just picture, okay, Maharaj said we have to have a picture of Vrindavan, so go to Google, you know, type in Vrindavan. 20 pictures came up and downloaded one and put it up. No. The picture that you collect has to be a picture that really strikes you. Put that on your wall. Put on something that really speaks to you. To put on something that just overwhelms you again and again. Put that on your wall. Make that wall an extraordinary wall. It is the spiritual world. In this way, we surround ourselves with spiritual impressions and make our home into a holy place. The same way we are listening to transcendental music, something that touches our heart. All these things that speak to our heart create an external world that will support us, that will inspire us. It helps. It helps a lot, actually. We need it. So gradually we begin to realize we need these things. Deity worship is exactly based on that principle. It is said that the purification of a Vaishnava happens in a combination of Bhagavad Vidhi and Pancharatriki Vidhi, and that these are like two tracks of the railway. The train runs on two tracks. We run on these two tracks. Bhagavad Vidhi means chanting of the holy name, Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering. The Pancharatrika Vidhi means the worship of Krishna, the deity. This is outside of our heart. We do it as external arrangements. But we get purified in these things. All these create deep sanskaras, deep impressions in our consciousness. So we need to create this kind of piety. So Pancharatrika helps us to create sukriti, to create piety. Bhakti on Mukhi Sukriti. When we have Bhakti on Mukhi Sukriti, it means transcendental piety, Sukriti. Then naturally the mind will be drawn to Krishna instead of having to always push it to Krishna. When one always has to push his mind to Krishna, push our consciousness to Krishna, then Krishna consciousness is nothing but stress. But when we become drawn to Krishna, then it becomes natural. So ultimately in Krishna consciousness, it's about being drawn to Krishna. So let us follow our taste. If there is one melody that just transports you to the spiritual world, try to learn it. If you can't, play it on a tape over and over. Right? Until it's sort of like just you wake up with it, you go to bed with it, it's always there. Like that. To get absorbed, to be drawn to Krishna is
is actually a natural way of developing Krishna consciousness.
That can already happen very quickly, very quickly, because we have a taste, so we should follow our taste. Some taste is there. Let's follow our taste in our spiritual life. In this way, our meditation begins to develop. And in this way, we can internally always be in Vrindavan, even when we are here in Melbourne. And when once we are there, always living in Vrindavan, we are simply meditating on assisting the eternal residence of the Holy Dham. In Guru Vastakam, we are chanting the glories of the spiritual master, and we're chanting that verse, Nikunya Yuno Rati Kiri Siddhai Yayali Bir Yuti Abeksaniya. It is translated as that the spiritual master is always involved in making wonderful arrangements to assist Radha and Krishna in the growth of Vrindavan. So, how does he do that? By always thinking of how can I make arrangements of pleasure for Krishna. Even here, how can I make arrangements of pleasure for Krishna? So Krishna consciousness, my point today is about cultivating or walking the natural path in Krishna consciousness, allowing our natural attraction for Krishna to grow. That's what I'm talking about, instead of like pushing our living a life in passion and then pushing them on, I have to chant again. I mean, sometimes I look at someone and I think, are you suffering? Sometimes, you know, just you think, like, you know, are you in pain? Sometimes you wonder, right? It doesn't have to be like that. That's my point. That's not Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan are naturally absorbed in serving Krishna, and they're appreciating. So they're not like racing through their rounds. They're not like rushing through their service. You know, like running through. Okay, so next. What's next? Now, this all this stress that we create in our spiritual life makes spiritual life a burden. Actually, we can try and somehow or other become a little more relaxed and actually take some time to appreciate. It's early in the morning, the sun shines. Nice. And the holy name, it was just nice actually to peacefully chant, peacefully sit at the fountain, you know, so just chant. Nice. So to actually have some nice moments at least in our Krishna consciousness is actually very powerful, gives us a lot of inspiration. Because somewhere Vrindavan is our home, as Srila Prabhupada pointed it out. Somewhere Vrindavan is the place where we must be peaceful. At home, I must be peaceful. At home, I must feel that I'm getting some positive energy. At home, I must feel that I'm getting rejuvenated. So that we have to somehow or other create in our life a little bit of a place of spiritual rejuvenation. This is our transcendental a transcendental source of inspiration, where we are in deep meditation on how nice the service is that the residents of Vrindavan are offering to Krishna. We may not be able to do it, but still, to remember it is very nice. I'm looking at the six Goswamis here. There is transcendental potency in that picture, because these Goswamis, they were thinking about Krishna. They were taking the time to appreciate Krishna, to relish Krishna, and then they went deeper in that relishing, and deeper in that relishing, and deeper, and they filled their time with more and more relishing Krishna. And eventually it became an ocean, premamritam bonidi. And then they became dhira, priyajanakaro. They became dear to everyone, to the gentle, to the ruffians. They were totally renounced. They were just giving up all the all wealth very easily, because they were actually absorbed. But it wasn't that they were like under with 11,000 fold, 24 hours a day, remembering Krishna. All right, so I'll end with that. Any question or comment? Yes.
Maharaj, what you just said is basically absorbed in the consciousness of the way, in Vrindavan that happens. And also, we said that we can feel that, if we don't rush ourselves, if we don't stress ourselves, and, take it naturally, then considering, the practicality of things, it takes a lot of time really. So, how do we, balance between these two, Okay, we have to absorb ourselves in Vrindavan consciousness, but yet, physically we are here, we have to go to work and everything.
Tell me
how
all about
do we do that?
I know. It's a struggle. And this is the struggle of being in the material world. There's no doubt about it. And everyone has that struggle. But we have to deal with that with intelligence. At least we have to create space. We have to create space for our Krishna consciousness. And as much as possible, we have to take time. Now, sometimes it may be that there are periods that things are totally stressed out. Then we have to also somewhere plan other periods where we can be absorbed more naturally. Yeah. So partially it may be like that. And even in our everyday life, we have to try and create some space. Time management means that you have to look at what are the things that are important, and I have to allot time to all the important things. And nowadays, everyone needs time management. And it's not possible to be a devotee in these modern times and to not have any sense of time management. If I wouldn't be conscious of time management, I don't know if I would have, if I would finish 16 rounds every day. If I would just let my 16 rounds happen, if I would just get up and say, well, I'm going to chant 16 rounds today and see how it comes, I'll chant and then, okay, whatever happens, then at 6 o'clock someone comes to the door and I'm just on round number 8 and I just let that happen and then I chant and then and so on and so on. Then I may find that at night I'm very tired. Right? And then I have 4 rounds left, and there's a thing. Oh. sometimes you fall asleep in the middle of these last rounds. You find yourself on the sofa or on the carpet or anywhere. It's somehow or other, it happened. Oops, not finished. Well, I'd better chant them tomorrow because the quality will anyway be no good. You know, what's the point in chanting them if they're not really quality? I'd better use that injunction in the nectar of devotion, which says that if you can't finish them one day, you may chant them next day. Well, I like that one very much, that quote. I'll use it. The emergency way out. Okay. And it becomes an everyday, and then it becomes, oh dear, I tried to chant yesterday's rounds, I just couldn't do it. And then, but I'm keeping a count, and I'm 771 rounds here. I'm working on it. I'm really working on it. Yes, like this approach. So how to avoid that? Yeah, that's where time management has to come in, and where we realize, well, I will not say four rounds for the evening. That's not possible. I must do it at another point in the day. Maybe I have to increase a bit in the morning. It has to be planned. 16 rounds have to be planned. Then it can be done. And if we plan them, we may as well plan a little bit of extra space so that it's not so stressed also, that we don't plan them like too tight. Some people make schedules, whoa, they're like super stressed, and then I can chant three on the tram, and I can chant, and so on. I can chant two in the car, one in my lunch break. It can be like that, but if we have to plan, that is my point, as good as we can. And there's the immediate planning, and then there's also the planning of the bigger picture. If you're ambitious, you get an opportunity in the company to make promotion. Oh yes, that's very good. But then you just have to give that little extra effort. Right? The higher up one goes on the corporate ladder, the more intense it becomes. The more you have to become completely dedicated to the work. So for devotees, many times it's not so helpful to go up the corporate ladder, to stay a little, on a relatively, not too much, live a little simple, then there's not so much stress also. Then we can maybe create more time for our chanting. Even in the temple, if we are running around all day and we do every little bit of service that is there to do in the temple and we chant terrible rounds, is that really what we should be doing? I don't think so. I think one has to understand that that's over endeavor. We have to really protect these rounds somehow or other. Even in the name of service, not neglect them. So it's all a matter of organizing one's life. So time management is something everybody in this world needs to know, because we're living in a world where they don't give us any time. Never. And ISKCON is no better. That's my experience. They don't give you any time in the Hare Krishna movement. Maybe even less, because you live on your job. If you live in the temple, then you live on your job. You're 24 hours in call. Hi, Baba. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We need some emergency. We need someone in the kitchen this morning. 6 o'clock. Cook the breakfast. There go 8 rounds. Goodbye. Yeah. That's not so easy. Time management is one. Is the only thing I can offer. Short term and long term. Anyone else?
Some people have more proclivity for reading, some people have more proclivity for cooking, for some practical stuff.
Oh, well, chanting, you know, has to be done whether there's a natural taste for chanting or not. That has to be done. Mostly, I wouldn't say sometimes. You said sometimes. I will say it different. I said mostly there is no taste for chanting. Somehow or another. Chanting japa is not so easy in the initial stages. One has to become quite advanced before there's a taste for chanting. Mostly, it's done as a duty. So that's all right. So duty is also there. So it's not only about taste, it's also about duty. But I say if we support that duty with taste, that will help us in performing our duty. It's definitely easier if you have created a nice devotional atmosphere at home to chant than if you chant in a room with like cold white walls and neon light all by itself. It's more difficult. It's just more difficult. So to make a bhajan kutir, a place which is favorable for our bhajan, and to make our house into a bhajan kutir, good idea. But then we must do our duty. The chanting must be done. Some like to put on Prabhupada's japa tape. Of course, some people put on Prabhupada's japa tape so loud that they can't even hear themselves anymore, and they wonder who's doing the chanting this morning. But whatever may be. You know. Yeah, now duty is there. Yeah, for the time being, we'll probably chant our rounds out of duty, and sometimes, suddenly you have a day that you actually like it. Mm-hmm. But mostly it's out of duty. But then again, even if we chant out of duty, on another platform, we like it. Because if one day you don't chant, it just would feel very strange. Something like, you know, something's missing today, something's really not right. So it becomes very much part of our life, even if we are not chanting with ecstasy. So that's the beginning, to build up the habit, the attachment to chant every day. That's the beginning. It builds up the momentum. One has to build up momentum in chanting. It's very important. It's about regular. It must be regular. The best thing is at the same time every day. That's the best. Same time. Best thing is to chant 16 rounds in one go. Not break them up. Breaking up of rounds is not good. Four here, four there, six, and then the leftovers. That's not the best. The best is just say, stop everything, 16 rounds at one stretch. That's the best. Or a few rounds before Mongolite and the rest after. That's also the best. All rounds before Mongolite, the very best. And the worst is those late night rounds. Oh boy. I also used to be in Vrindavan a member of the late night japa club that would meet at night in the temple. And the question was, how many? And the regulars would say 3, 4, and then someone would say 6, and you go, ooh. Anyone who said more than 8, you know, you go, ooh. So then. We would walk together, so we'd help each other to stay awake and go through these last rounds, you know. And then you start to hallucinate, you know, as you're walking. You see, like, and then you're the last one left over, you know, and then course you find yourself sleeping somewhere. One devotee fell asleep on his rounds and was dreaming that someone rang the doorbell, and there was an apartment and a staircase going down to the front door. So in his dream, he went down to the door to open the door, and Prabhupada was at the door. Srila Prabhupada, you're here. And Prabhupada said, "Did you finish your rounds?" Then he woke up. So Prabhupada is very merciful. He may wake us up even, but don't count on it, you know. I guess better we make arrangements to do our duty nicely and not count on Prabhupada to come and wake us up. Any other question? Okay. Well, then, thank you very much. We had lots of fun here. Today I'm relaxing, you see, the last few days there was a lot of stress. And today I'm totally relaxing. You can notice the classes also relaxed mode.